This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 23rd of August, 1961. The title of this lecture is Auditing Basics. This tape is 86 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
How you doing?
How you doing? Y'all dead today, I mean all alive? 23rd, huh?
Right.
23 Aug AD 11. Well, I'm glad you made it. I didn't think you'd ever get to August the 23rd. Back there in the Roman Empire, I was damn sure you wouldn't get here. I remember one space opera society when I didn't think it was very probable that you'd make it. I remember standing there at the edge of the spaceport as the battle planes took off, and I said, well, they won't make it. I knew, you see, I knew the high command hadn't given you any ammunition. Well, anyhow. Anyhow, you're in the midst of clearing, and your first takeoff on this subject has already occurred. And I've been talking about it for years. Talking about it for a long time. Everybody coming along saying, where's the clears? Where's the clears? Where's the clears? Very embarrassing, you see. Central organization, PCs, flying over banisters, you know, and hung up by their heels, you know, being so people pouring cornstarch into them so they looked like they were standing up stiff. You know. And where the clears, where the clears, where the clears, where the clears. I never got so tired of a sentence in my life. And I'll tell you my withhold. Well, instead of standing there asking me silly questions, why the hell don't you find out? You know, I mean, kind of forthright. But that's kind of the way it was. Because it's very mysterious over a long period of time as to what were the elements missing. What were the missing elements? What brought about this condition where people didn't get cleared? And now I realize that we might have had, well, have had dozens and dozens of clearing processes. That's why I've been studying, you see, for some years, auditing. I've been studying auditing. There have been a parallel study, the theory and practice of Scientology has included, of course, theory, experimental results, that sort of thing. But this other study, a big broad one, is auditing, just as such. And I just sort of relaxed a few years ago and just started watching, looking it over, and seeing what this was all about, and looking at it from all sides, and what were people doing with people. You see, it isn't good enough that I can take somebody and audit them and get some horrendous result and so forth, and everything is fine, because you run out of me rather rapidly. In the first place, it interrupts my photography. And, you know, frankly, you could only put in so many hours a day, figure out the number of human beings on Earth, and it gets to be some very disproportionate figure, doesn't it? Group auditing, well, matter of fact, I've come close to blowing a lot of cases apart with group auditing, you know, but it still didn't make any total grade. There still weren't any clears on a group auditing basis, so it had to fall back on individual auditing. Well, what happens in individual auditing that makes it fail to result in clearing? And our biggest single breakthrough on this, of course, aside from all the technology we have on how to audit, the biggest single breakthrough on this is simply that the goal disappears and the terminal disappears if the rudiments are out. And that is becomes one of these crusher things, like when you pull the trigger on a guillotine, why the blade falls, you know? And it's one of these facts that stand up there and twice as big as the Empire State Building with three Washington monuments on top of it. So, I mean, it's a fact with an exclamation point and a capital F. It can't do it. Now, if that is the case, why do PCs get audited with the rudiments out? Let's take a look at that. Let's be very dispassionate about all this. Why these four little simple rudiments? How come? And we find something very interesting when we look there. We find something very, very interesting. They aren't considered to be important. The level of importance of getting those rudiments in is slight. Now, the auditors are first clear here. One of her first clear observations is the fact that auditors thought of security checks as something you got through with, luckily, because nothing dropped. So, security check isn't looked at as something that will advance a case. It is looked at as something that has to be gotten through with, and the faster we get through a security check, of course, the more time we can put on auditing. And I think rudiments fall into the same category, the same identical category. Rudiments are a necessary evil, and if we can just get through the rudiments without anything dropping, wham, whiz, everything is fine now. Because, of course, if we spend any time on the rudiments, it would just be time lost from auditing. Interesting, but I think that is the basic consideration. Do you agree that it's just kind of a... It would be too bad if you had to take up a lot of PT problems and ARC breaks and things of this character because you wouldn't get any auditing done in the session. It's an unlucky thing. It's just an auditor sits down in the beginning of the session and he puts the cans in the PC's hands, and sometimes he has lucky days. Sometimes the PC has no PTPs, ARC breaks, withholds, or anything of the sort, and he can get on to audit. And sometimes he has unlucky days and the PC has present time problems and so forth, and he has to take these things up. Isn't that kind of the way it's looked at? Well, I think that's about the first consideration we have to shift. Now, it looks like the rudiment is out, mostly on the evaluation of importance of the rudiment. Now, I gave you a series of rules that if the rudiment didn't fall with the meter set at a third of a dial drop, why, then you could neglect it. Well, that was in sort of desperation, because everything was going awry and so forth. And I'm going to exercise my privilege of having created it as is it. And let's go to the other extreme. Aristotelian, he had a pendulum, you know, and the world was all described as swinging on a pendulum, and it went between the two extremes before it settled at the mean. So we might as well go over to the far side of the pendulum and run the whole thing at sensitivity 16. Just for kicks. Try it. Because the rules I just gave you yesterday basically take care of these rudiments being wildly out. The materials gave you on the 22nd, which just simply consisted of what you did if you consistently had too many present time problems. You did 1A, present time problems, trouble. And if you were getting lots of ARC breaks, same remedy. Let's get 1A flat on this case. Got the idea? So that gave you a good way to approach the whole situation and didn't leave you messed up with doing nothing but rudiments. Now, I think that this is one of the difficulties with rudiments, that the rudiments processes don't work well. I think that is one of the basic difficulties with rudiments, is the processes which are given in model session are tailor-made as a highly generalized shot at an awful lot of cases, and I think they miss cases often enough so that auditors become impatient with these particular processes. And there are PCs who cannot run responsibility, so running responsibility on a present time problem is a waste of time. And it just takes you forever to clean up the present time problem running responsibility on it. So you say, oh my God, it's got a present time problem. I'll be sitting here running this responsibility and the PC can't run responsibility. So there's a hell of a present time problem arises around a present time problem, you see. And that makes a rough show. So it must be a certain dissatisfaction must exist around the processes which are given in model session and which we've had for some time. Must be a dissatisfaction with those. Otherwise, you wouldn't feel such a strain on the subject of handling rudiments. Now, there are several constants in auditing sessions, and these constants are this, are these. And you've got an awful lot of rules, and you could be terribly rule happy. You know, you could just be ritual happy until you can't see where you're going. But there are a few out of all of these rules, and there could be said to be hundreds of them. Out of all of these, there are very few of them which have any real bearing on the subject of auditing. And I can give you those very, very rapidly, run them straight off. I already gave them to you, I think, yesterday. I can give you possibly a slightly varied version of it, but just because I play it off the cuff. And that is, you've got to start session and get the PC in session. And you've got to get all your rudiments in, and you've got to flatten all the processes you start, and you've got to end the session. Now, that's just about the lot. And the errors you can make with this are most flagrantly failing to get the rudiments in, running too many processes without flattening them, and failing to end sessions smoothly. And those are the failures that go along with this. And if you don't manage that little small basket full of tricks, of course, you're going to have an awful time. Now you can get particularized and say, well, you've got to have your TRs well. That's for sure. That's for sure. But that almost goes without saying that a fellow who is an auditor would have his TRs in some kind of shape, don't you think? Now to this, we can add this interesting observation to show you how particularized we can get. For a PC to be in communication with the auditor, it is necessary for the auditor to be in communication with the PC. There is some added factor here, and that is added into in-sessionness. You see, the PC has to feel he is in communication or able to talk to the auditor. Well, let's broaden this. Able to talk to the auditor, able to be in communication with the auditor. Let's spread it a little bit further. And an auditor who would give invalidative comments, or who would fail to articulate an auditing command so that he couldn't be understood and so forth, is knocking the PC out of session. Get the idea? Because the PC's understanding of what the auditor is saying drops. Therefore, the PC's understanding of what the auditor is doing drops. So therefore, the ARC drops and the auditor finds a PC going out of session. On what? On himself not being in session. So the auditor's got to be there giving an auditing session before you could expect the PC to be in session. And that sums it up. Part of in sessionness for the PC is for the auditor to be giving a session. So we can add in a masterfully way here one third line to the PC being in session. One, he's got to, the PC has to be interested in his own case, and he has to be willing to talk to the auditor. We can still say it the same way, but the auditor has to be giving a session. And that is in session. Now, what consists of an auditor giving a session? Actually, it's an auditor sitting down to run the session. The auditor sits down and runs a session. Now, he can run an awfully haphazard sounding session, and there'd be no doubt in the PC's mind whatsoever about who was running the session, and you'd get an awful lot of auditing done, wouldn't you? There'd be an awful lot of auditing occur on that. There might be a lot of rules violated one way or the other, but the rules I've just given you can't be violated. The second you violate those, you've got no auditing session whatsoever. So it isn't how you hold your pinky, it's how you hold your PC in session. And of course, the best way to hold a PC in session is by giving one. Sounds like one of these horrible, horrible simplicities. There's a whole tribe of Indians that I've commented on, and in their wisdom read off there, actually out of the books of the missionaries who were so interested in them, way up the Hudson someplace or the St. Lawrence or somewhere. You know, the way to cross the river is to cross the river. The way to eat duck is to eat duck, you see? And their wisdom just ran on like this. It actually filled up numerous pictographs on numerous wigwams. And has come down to us in the numerous pages of numerous long since murdered missionaries. A bunch of it up here in the Hudson Bay Company archives. The way to cross a river is to cross a river. The way to eat a duck is to eat a duck. The way to shoot somebody is to shoot somebody. This was very, very Q&A sort of wisdom, but in this particular case it sure fits. The way to run a session is run the session. Rather a thing. Now, to tell somebody how to run a session has its limitations, and the limitations are these. How much disagreement is there on the part of the auditor with the forms and actions he is using to run the session? And that should be a subject taken up in a HPA course. And that should be one of the subjects, and we will institute it in HPA courses. After the fellow, you know, it's HCA, but it's HPA. Never heard it called anything else in the early days in England. Always has stuck with me. It's rather nostalgic to me, as a matter of fact. We had quite a few in the old days. We had quite a few cockneys and so forth around the organization. It was marvelous to hear them. You can remember some of them. Anyway, it'd be simply this. We'd probably write up some sort of a drill or some sort of a test. I've got a couple of them to get together. And this would be the second one. The other one is a straight security check. It operates the 7A, 7B. I haven't written them finally yet. I've got the notes on them, it's all. And that is simply this. It's after the fellow is all set up and knows, been jumped through the TRs and has been given rudiments and model session and that sort of thing, and he's supposed to sit in there and pitch and deliver this, you see. Now we're going to take an E-meter and we're going to find out what disagreements he has with these elements. Good idea, isn't it? He must have some disagreements with them. He won't do them. He must have some basic ARC breaks with some part of the modus operandi. And of course, I've enumerated a couple of practical aspects of this. Some days you can get some auditing in, and some days you run rudiments. The lucky and unlucky aspects of it. But the dissatisfaction must stem from the fact that rudiments processes do not easily handle the situation which you find in the rudiments. So that would make it kind of tough to handle rudiments. So there must be some kind of a disagreement with handling rudiments. But there might be some more fundamental disagreement than this, such as, well, he shouldn't have to be audited. Now, that would be an awfully sweeping disagreement with the whole thing, you see. This expresses itself in numerous ways, such as a PC shouldn't act that way. In upper indoc drills, we have had the remark made in an upper indoc. I was running one ACC, a remark was made. PCs never act this way. Little did she know. She, by the way, ran slam bang into a PC abruptly and immediately afterwards, who did act that way, and was she surprised? She thought that we were running upper Indoc much too rough, don't you see? So she was in basic disagreement with this much roughness in an upper Indoc because PCs didn't act that way. Now, that's a very fundamental disagreement. And yet, it works this way, that you, using the elements of auditing, could take anybody, and I do mean anybody, and by running them with the rudiments out, produce a confused ARC breaky PC. You could make anybody into an ARC breaky PC, that I'm fairly sure of, just by running with rudiments out. Now, if you don't run an ARC breaky PC, you're liable to run down into a perpetuative PC. So don't look for just violence. How about propitiation? You run with rudiments out, you get propitiation. I'm about to send a cable after the lecture here to, it'll be a very historically noteworthy cable. I'm about to send it to a certain area and say, so-and-so is expected at St. Hill for training. This will be a vast shock to one and all, because everybody consists of this so-and-so is a very fine auditor. And he's not. He's not. Because I've had the unfortunate experience of meeting some of his PCs. And they've just been beaten without rudiments into a heavy propitiation with regard to this particular chap. And they all look caved in. He's not making any clears, and he's having a heck of a time with auditing. But everybody says he's a marvelous auditor. You got the idea? Mm-hmm. We're getting a lot of advertisement going on here. So I'm going to send a cable and say, send him in here. And we'll get him over this trick, and he'll be a good auditor. But there will be some wild impatience with rudiments or the mechanics of auditing. And I know already that this particular auditor never flattens a process. Never. I mean, it's almost a modus operandi. Never flattens a process. Never. And this leaves everybody stuck on the track, you see. So that's a bum show, and just for the good of the game, why, I'll send a cable. I'm not bringing that up for any other reason, but to show you, you're somebody who never has an ARC breaky PC. Because dead men can't protest. This guy, you see, the fellow says, I have a present time problem. The auditor just comes down on him with a horrible crush and a crash and so forth and bowls it through. And the PC says, well, I don't really like being bowled through. And the auditor knocks that out of the road, you see. And then he says, I have a PC. He said, well, I do have a little bit of whiff hold. And the auditor says, well, that's not important to the session. And if he runs any rudiments at all, that's about the net result of it, you see. And the end product is not an ARC breaky PC, but a highly propitiative PC. So you see, it could go in the other direction, too. Of course, the guy has to come up through all that auditing. That's easy to do, too. But in order to go anyplace, you see how it could work. So the rudiments could be out, and you could produce several different phenomena, which I won't bother to list, by having the rudiments out during a session. So a disagreement with the rudiments, or a difficulty in handling rudiments, or an actual technical lack in the field of rudiments, then could produce a considerable bit of randomity. It could prevent clearing, it could upset things, it could prevent case advances and make Scientology fail in all directions. See how that could be? So we'll shape this up. Now we've already had a breakthrough, and the key rudiment is the present time problem. That is the key rudiment. This is a sneaky one because it very often doesn't fall on first inspection. You say, do you have a problem? The fellow has a very immediate present time problem. You get your instant fall. But you ask him if he has a present time problem, and classification and dispersal, and it must be something else, and that sort of thing enters into it, you see, and it isn't even reactively in view. He has no reality on his migraine headaches being a present time problem to him. You audit him a little bit and so forth, and you suddenly are facing a long-duration present-time problem that wasn't really there before. And on a little inspection of present-time problems as you go along, you'll suddenly start finding out why this case hasn't been snapping and popping. It's because he's just getting reality on the fact that he does have a problem, And this other factor enters in, and this is an interesting factor. This is probably a sneak limiting factor on all cases. The PC goes into action by reason of auditing, and being now in motion on this planet, accumulates problems, and is now being audited with present time problems. You get the idea? All right. Sitting there quietly in the corner like a mushroom, he didn't accumulate any present time problems. You audit him, he gets up a little bit, he goes into motion in the society, and you have a universe absolutely triggered up to furnish more problems than you can easily count. He gets a whole bunch of problems, and then his continued auditing then is auditing against these new present time problems, and so he doesn't continue to make a case gain, and you get into a grind. In other words, all the auditing benefit he got was enough auditing benefit to pull him up into action. And I've noticed it now for about 13, 14 years that one of the primary characteristics of a case gain is the person going into action. See, I've tried this business of just sitting in an ivory tower and processing people endlessly. It didn't work well because I kept losing everybody. See, they didn't think there was any game and there was nothing doing, and it was just Ron, he was supposed to do these things and he did them. And then they went out and they got into action and they'd be over the hills and far away. And I'd very often run into a case that I couldn't complete. The fellow was now too interested in life and he was getting going in all directions and so forth. Well, it's just as well that I didn't continue to pressure auditing as far as that particular person was concerned, because I would have been auditing uphill against all these brand new accumulated present time problems, don't you think? But where you continue to audit somebody who has gone into motion in life, you are probably auditing up against new present time problems. So the cycle that you could expect on present time problems is, as the case went along, he would get more, not less. You could expect, as auditing continued, if it were being successful, to run into not just more and more withholds, which you know he comes up to the responsibility of knowing he's withholding, but this other thing. He accumulates and has, in a session, more and more present time problems to handle. So you're liable to get some cyclic aspect. You're liable to get a cyclic aspect of a PC who is relatively ARC breaking. And it looked like this. You audit him up the line, and then he goes into action and he gets a lot of new problems, see? And then we have some ARC breaks of some kind or another, and his auditing ceases, and then these settle out, don't you see? And he gets, and then we audit him again, and the time we pick him up for auditing, well, he doesn't have many problems, but he's not doing much, you see? And then he moves up into a bunch of present time problems, and then the ARC breaks, and then we get all ARC busted in the sessions, and then he knocks off auditing, don't you see? Only he's not crawling up 3 inches and falling back one, he's crawling up 2 inches and falling back 2 inches and crawling up 2 inches and falling back 2 inches, just endlessly, okay? This would be the way it would be. So that is probably the sneak limiting factor on cases. That's a sneaker. It is your very auditing gain which brings the PC new present time problems, because going into motion, of course, in this universe, he accumulates more present time problems if he is in motion. It was all right as a vegetable, he didn't have any. It's true, too, he didn't have one. We've run into somebody who was on a pension or who was getting a disability payment. And if we'd cured the disability payment, he would have had problems, you see. So we cured the disability payment, and then all of a sudden we had an ARC breaking PC and we'd lose him as a PC. You see, it looked like because we'd gotten rid of his pension, you know, he was upset with us. Or that he wouldn't give up his bad heart or something, because this would mean he'd give up his pension or something. So auditing sort of stalled there someplace. Well, actually, he had everything taped. Here's what really happened. He had everything taped. Life was absolutely by the square, diagonal, and perfect circle. You see, at the first of every month, he drew a check, and he went home and read the comic books, or whatever he did. You know? And this was all that ever happened. All that ever happened. He just went through this cycle. And now all of a sudden, while we move him up the line, he goes into a little more action, and as he goes by the comic book stand, he makes a triangle is put into his life, you see. He walks by some girl's house and sees her. That's guaranteed to give him problems. And then because we've been running a quiet pre-clear who didn't have any problems, we then, of course, don't expect to have a PC who does have any problems. So we are a little bit taken by surprise. So therefore, we're lulled into not looking for them. So a little datum for you as you go by, probably not a surgingly important datum, but one that's well worth noting, is as auditing progresses, there are two tests of progress, independent of all other tests, which an auditor can note. Does the PC have an increasing number of withholds? Does he have new withholds on the security check? That's a very good test. If you give your PC a security check and you went through it all very, very nicely, even though it took quite a time, and there were, 75% of the questions had no fall on them. And then you gave him another security check, and 75% of the questions had no fall on them. And you gave him another security check, and he had no withholds of any kind. Watch it, because this boy is not getting better. Betterment is represented by increased responsibility, which brings about new withholds. And what you should finally work up to on a Form 3, really, is every question live, particularly the way you're running them now. You see, they go on the whole track. You mean to tell me? Do you mean to tell me? Are you actually willing to sit there and tell me that in the last 200 trillion years, you have never committed any single one? Or is there one of the crimes that you haven't committed that is listed on the security check? Well, I doubt it. I doubt it. I'll go into doubt for you. And the other one is an increasing number of present time problems which have to be handled at the beginning of session. Those are the two. Increasing liveness of response to a security check. An increasing liveness of response to the question, do you have a present time problem? Now, there is another factor which mitigates the horrors of that exact situation. And that is, as the PC increases his ability, he blows these things faster. So although you have more, by maybe triple, you have less time being occupied because it only takes a quarter as long to clear them, you see. So if he's making progress at all, they clear faster. So that would be another little cross-check. He has more present time problems, he has more withholds, and they clear up faster. And if that isn't happening to your PC as you audit him, then you're probably auditing a PC with the rudiments really wildly out. There's something wildly wrong in this auditing session, and the most wildly wrong thing there can be is just wildly out rudiments. Simple. Rudiments aren't in. PC isn't making progress, rudiments aren't in. You're dealing with processes today which can only be stopped by the rudiments. And the only thing that could happen is the rudiments aren't in, that's all. Or the PC didn't report for the session, or the auditor isn't getting one. Now, on the general subject of auditing, an auditor who expects the PC to be doing something besides being a PC, of course, is inevitably in trouble. If you expect something else of the PC besides PCing, you, of course, are in trouble. It's like auditing somebody who was supposed to be doing the cooking at the same time. And you have to, this is an odd beingness to grant, and it sounds very difficult. Doesn't sound difficult, it sounds simple, Simon, to say that this is a beingness that has to be granted. But an auditor, in running a session, has as one of its essential parts granting PC beingness to the PC. You know, the auditor is not willing to have a PC so much as the auditor is willing for a PC to be sitting there, you see? Willing to make no demand on the person sitting opposite him beyond that of being a PC. And if you check it over, you find out some auditing difficulties you've had in the past very possibly may trace to an expectancy of the PC being something else beside a PC. Now, all a PC is supposed to do, there isn't any such thing as laying down a code for a PC because he's just a PC, but actually, what does a PC do? Well, a PC does the session which the auditor is auditing. You see, he does the session. He does what the auditor says. He answers what the auditor says and so forth. This is what the auditor expects of him. We're not laying restrictions on the PC, but this is what you as an auditor expect of the PC, that he follow your auditing commands, that he do the things which you said, that he furnish the information which is required of him. That's what you're demanding of him. Now, if you grant this beingness of being a PC to the PC, and that is all you're expecting to do, why, you will find out that your auditing enormously simplifies, because you then don't expect him to volunteer information or be a walking encyclopedia of something or other, or tell you if something is going wrong or something. This is nothing. This is no part of his bargain. It's not up to him to tell you if things going wrong. You see, that's up to you. It's up to you to find it out. You got a meter, and you got your pair of eyes and your observation of the PC, types of answers. You got innumerable ways to find out, but it isn't up to him. And there is no rule any place that says he has to tell you what to do. Nor is there any rule of telling you what is happening unless you ask for it. In other words, it's just grant the beingness of being a PC to the PC, and he's sitting there being a PC, and that's it. You don't expect anything else of this PC but to answer your questions and furnish information. That is, answer the questions and follow the auditing commands and stay there in session and do what you say. That's all you expect of the PC. Now, if that's all the beingness which you're granting and that's all you expect the PC, you see at once that it is necessary for you to find out what's going on, because there's no responsibility on the PC's part to tell you what's going on. Got the idea? I notice you're looking at me a little puzzled, but I think that's because you're not puzzled, it's you're just digesting a fact. I wonder if you've ever expected a PC to be something else beside a PC. At any time have you looked to a PC to be anything else but a PC while being a PC from the beginning to the end of the session? Because if you have, I will guarantee that at that point your session broke down. In some mysterious way, it would break down. Now, Scientologists are very prone, understandably, and nothing wrong with this at all, me too, prone to run a big ought-to-be. Well, run an ought-to-be on anything under the sun, moon, or stars. Run it on the revolutions of planets, the evolutions, so-called, of governments, or anything else. Run any kind of an ought-to-be you want to, except in an auditing session. See? Just delete that ought-to-be out of the auditing session, and you'll be much happier. I know, because I know this personally, you see, because you run a horrendous big ought-to-be on me. I'm the most ought-to-be character. It's marvelous. It's absolutely marvelous. And And I tell you, if I was no saint, you're going to make me into one. Anyway, an ought to be actually doesn't belong in any part of the auditing session. It's like the upper indoc student who was saying, well, PCs don't act like that, so therefore I shouldn't be doing this wrestling around the floor, don't you see? Well, a certain feeling like that could get into a session, you know. Your horrified aspects. Sometimes some PC comes up with a string of whip holes that would lift the hair of a priest, you know, with all they listen to. And cool, you know, you say. And well, you're actually running an ought to be. You say this person ought to be a well-disciplined, well-behaved person and should have been well-disciplined and well-behaved for the last 200 trillion years. Well, if that's the case, how the hell did they get in the PC chair? And this ought to be is joined up with a probably is. It's not only an ought to be, but there's also a probably is. You have a supposition about this PC, and then you operate on that supposition. And this supposition, of course, is liable to find you way out in left field, or it's liable to find you sailing without sails in the middle of the Antarctic. You aren't quite sure what happened to you or how you got there. Give you an example. Perhaps 2 weeks of auditing were wasted on a course once on a dear lady who was the most disarming looking, probably is, you ever saw. She was a real probably is, you know, because she looked like a dear, sweet, unassuming lady, just the very kind that you would cast for Aunt Mary in some super saccharine play of 1900, you know? Just marvelous, most marvelous casting you ever saw in your life, you know? And everybody for 2 weeks audited her that way. And it just never occurred to ask her for any blood and guts. Most marvelous thing you ever saw. And when the curtains finally fell on this particular case, an auditor had just simply become sharp enough to go past the probably is. You see? And instead of buying this mock-up complete as a package, noticed that all of the efforts to get this person to improve in any way, shape, or form were all failing, so there must be something else there. And began to really sweat over this case. I think Mary Sue was behind this. Push. Get some of the wet holes off, and of course, this dear, sweet, perfect casting for Aunt Mary had made a specialty for the last 50 years of stealing everyone's husband that could possibly be stolen and engaging in nothing per se but flat out adultery in all directions. And there are probably something on the order of 400 different incidents of this particular term on this case. It's marvelous. When they finally got that security check going, man, it went like a prairie fire. This read like something bouncing Betty the gun mall, you know? And I remember another one in an HGC one time, and they had looked in vain. This was when we were doing dynamic assessments, and they'd looked in vain for any kind of a terminal on this lady. And she was dear, and she was sweet, and she was everything, but she was a rough, tough space commander. And that was her valence. And for some reason or other, when people get into the position of the loneliness of space, they tend to keep the valences because of the coldness of space and that sort of thing. But how about the loneliness of space and then the isolation of command added in on top of this, you see? And that really makes a honey. But everything about this case belied this valence. There couldn't possibly have been any such valence of any character whatsoever. So nobody looked for it. And I'm sure she must have said it. I'm sure the meters must have said it, but nobody could believe it. Don't you think? This was a rough, tough, blood and guts, buckle, master, you know? Why, she probably made Captain Bly look like a patsy. But the only role any auditor could see her in would be making cookies for the kiddies in the neighborhood. You know? So they just bought the mock-up and never asked for anything else. Well, I'll tell you, if the mock-up is factual and the case isn't advancing, don't blame Scientology. Just blame the estimate of the situation. This, quote, factual presentation must have some fantastic unknowns concerning it, which must be in wild disagreement. Now, for instance, I'll give you an idea here in technology how wild a wild disagreement can fail to resolve things. Jealousy, immediately and at once, must have to do with the terminals of men and women. Because men and women are jealous. Obviously, so if we run men and women, we solve jealousy. That's for sure. Only it won't. So it must be something else. Cases resolve on the isness of the case. No matter how hidden it is, it's still the isness of the case. Not the might-be's, ought-to-be's, or probably-is's. It's the isness of the case. And the isness of the case must be totally unknown to one and all if it fails to resolve at once. It must be just totally unknown. It is not what the PC is telling you if the PC is making no progress. If the PC is sitting there saying, complain, 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 complain about this, that, or the other thing, his lumbosis is just killing him, and you handle his lumbosis, and his lumbosis is just killing him, and you handle his lumbosis, and his lumbosis is just killing him, and you handle his lumbosis. Well, now you've bought one of these probably is's, you see. And you said it's probably his lumbosis. But obviously, if you haven't cured his lumbosis, don't blame your auditing skill. Just blame this one fact alone. You haven't gotten down to the isness of the situation, that's for sure. Let's begin a very tight series of questions that isolate what this is. Is it lumbosis or what? This person says to you all the time, my feet are cold, my feet are cold, so you audit him for cold feet. My feet are cold, so you audit him for cold feet. He comes up with this problem, cold feet, cold feet, cold feet. You keep auditing cold feet. And I can tell you by actual test that you could do that for 7 years. I know such a case. You could do it for 7 years without ever making a happy PC or getting much of a gain. And we must assume after a while that it isn't even cold feet. We have to assume after a while it just isn't cold feet because we're not auditing the isness. We must be auditing something else. We must be auditing some kind of an alter is of some kind. If auditing cold feet then doesn't resolve the PC's cold feet that he's complaining about, then the PC doesn't have cold feet. What does the PC have, for pity's sakes? So your line of questioning should go in on the line, not what makes cold feet, cold feet, cold feet, cold feet. Your line of questioning should go in on the basis, just exactly what are you complaining about? What is the isness of it? And you generally find out, well, it wasn't cold feet anyhow. A person just said cold feet, and really it isn't cold feet. It's because they burn all the time, and it isn't his feet, it's his ears. But he's afraid it'll go into his feet, and so forth, but that isn't what's really wrong. It's because of the disconnections of the spine, and they're liable to cause cold feet, because you can't get circulation in the feet, you see, if you have difficulties with the spine, and that sort of thing, and you get right down to it, and you find out they're afraid they have a disease. And that's the isness of the situation. How fascinating. Yet they were complaining about cold feet. You get how far afield this thing finally went. So your test is simply this. If something isn't resolving, you haven't got the isness of it. It's just if a case isn't going clear, the first isness of it that you would test is the session. You wouldn't be worried so much about the valence before you had the session straight. Got the idea. You got to have the session. Mm-hmm. That's the first isness. And the next isness are the rudiments. And the next isness after that would be what you're addressing in the case, and those would be the isnesses in more or less order of importance. Now, if you've got in the isness of a session, and you've got in the isness of the rudiments, and the person continues to complain, and you continue to try to help them with a certain, quote, isness, it's just a probably. It is never it if it isn't responding rapidly. It is some other isness, because you're looking at an alter isness of some kind. So if the valence is wrong, well, it's wrong, that's all. Find the right one. The most problem you're going to have with case is going to be in the realm of the long-duration present-time problem. And that is going to be the most suspect as far as its isness is concerned. Is that the problem? And the best test is, if it doesn't surrender rather rapidly as a problem, then you haven't gotten the PC to state the problem. That isn't what the problem is. In other words, it isn't necessarily true that you were handling it all badly. It just might be true that you are actually handling something which isn't there, and that something else is there to be handled, and you just don't happen to be handling that. But this isn't a good enough reason to change processes. We now have a test that tells us whether or not a process is working. Anything aside from two-way comm, which is totally limited to just asking, this is the three things I gave you yesterday, it's just you say, to the fellow, how are you doing, and tell me, and what is it, and that's the end, you see. There isn't any more to that. You can ask those many times repetitively in numerous ways and so forth, but that's the end. You're not running anything. Anything else is a process. So don't try to say you're two-way calming somebody's problems out while you're asking them to describe the problem, because you're running a process called describe that problem to me, please, thank you. Got it? Mm-hmm. You say describe the problem. You would say you can ask a PC, well, what is the problem there that you're worried about? And the PC says it's so and so and so and so, and you say, all right, I'll take that up, or something of the sort. You're right on the border between two-way calm, and you're still safely inside two-way calm, and running a process. And that's where the border crosses, right at that point. Because if you once more say, tell me the problem, you're in a process, and you're committed to flattening what you started. And the moment you leave two-way communication, you are committed to flattening what you begin. Whether you began it in a process form, model session, or not. If what you began produces tone arm motion, you are going to have to run the tone arm motion out of it, whether it is a rudiment or anything else. You got it? And therefore, you should not be very adventurous about what you begin. You better get a good grip on what you're going to start before you start it. Because the careless whiffity-bap launching madly into, well, a guy says, oh, I'm stuck in this, see, mother, it's all about mother, and I'm stuck in this about mother, and you say, well, is there something unknown about that? Yes, as a matter of fact, yeah, I never knew my mother. And needle moves. And you say, good, is it all right if we go on? Boy, have you goofed. Oh, God, that is a goof, you know. Something on the order of the biggest British dreadnought firing on Windsor Castle, you know. That is a goof, man. That's shame, blame, regret. I used to know this, that you could run three commands of a process without getting into serious trouble. But that was yesterday's processes. Today's processes commit you
right now with the first command, because they are hot. They are hot. You're auditing with sabers, and it's hot. You start something, finish it. Don't go shifting at all. And if you find yourself in the unlucky position of 3 days later, still running, which side of a girl is up? Thank you. Just look back at that moment when you unluckily started it. That's your only choice. Your only choice is to complete what you begin. Otherwise, you leave a PC with unfinished cycles, and these begin to hang up and make auditing itself a problem. Now, when there's too many unfinished cycles on a case, you've got the remedy of Prehab 13. You can take auditors and that sort of thing, some such generalized term, do a terminal assessment of some kind, run them on the Prehab scale. That's got a liability, too. Supposing you only had four levels live on the Prehab scale, and you decided, you know, when you were assessing auditors, you only had four levels live, and then you run fail to abandon. The auditor failed to abandon the case. What auditor didn't abandon your case? What auditor did, you know? What auditor did you fail to abandon, you know? And back and forth, and we got it all set. And we run that kind of flat, and there's no more needle action. You run those out on needle action. And you assess again, and you have seven levels live. Where do you go now? What do you do now? Well, this is the one exception which I will give you. You get off of that train, even though it's going 125 miles an hour, you hear me? You just get right off of that train. You go down to the bottom step and throw yourself into the brambles, because that's the time to get off. Because obviously you are running a terminal which is in wild disagreement with the PC's case, and you are living up the whole Prehab scale. And if you continue to do that, on your next assessment, having run faith in auditors, on your next assessment, you've got 12 live. 12 live. And if you ran it again now, this is just a funny peculiarity, you see, and you ran serene, what auditor was serene, and what were you serene about auditors, and so forth, you're going to have 20 live. 20 live levels. Well, don't get the whole Prehab primary and all the secondaries live before you find out that it didn't pay. You get it? Because the difficulty with running rudiments and running random processes of any kind whatsoever, the difficulty of it sums up only and totally to this. If they are in opposition to the PC's goal and terminal setup, the case will not progress at all. Now that's very interesting, isn't it? So that any process that you had ventured upon in the rudiments, any process that you had ventured upon to straighten out the PC so he could be audited, any process that you had ventured on, if it happened to be counter to the goal and the terminal of the PC, of course, was something that is better deserted fast. You got the idea? So it does have that that reserve on it. In the first place, you're trying to set up somebody to be run on routine 3. There is no other clearing process. You might as well make up your mind to it. That is broadly working. I can think of several processes that would undoubtedly clear people and all that sort of thing, but these are not on the assembly line, and remember, these processes in the hands of other auditors have not cleared people, so you are left with routine 3. So the job in running anything and getting the PC into session is just getting the PC up to the point of where it can be assessed and run on routine 3. That's all you're trying to do. So all other actions are preparatory to this action, because that's what's going to clear people. And as long as that one is followed out, and as long as you eventually get up to routine 3, and as long as you get routine 3 well done, you're going to clear people. And anything else is dross. It could be thousands of hours of dross, and it could all be entertaining, but it would not resolve the case or produce a clear. It could cure psychosomatics, and it'd make bank managers into bank clerks, and you could do almost anything. Make janitors into presidents. You could do all kinds of things with these things, you understand, and have, rather spottily and sporadically, because sitting there all the time is the golden valence, and it's the valence situation. So get a good reality on this routine three, and get a good reality on where it goes and what happens and what stops it from running. And of course, what stops it from running is basically the PC, before he's audited, is not in session. So you've got to get him into session. You've got to have a session. You've got to have a PC. You've got to have your rudiments in and the thing well straightened out. And then you've got to do a goals assessment. And then you've got to do a terminals assessment. Then you've got to get over there in a pre-has care and you've got to run it. And doing anything else, skip it. Anything which you do, I can tell you bluntly now, anything which you do which is not contributory to completing routine three is a waste of time. Now, there is only one process, type, and class which does not violate the goal and terminal and routine three. There's only one that does not violate, and that is routine 1A. Which is very, very contributory to it. Now, there is another one which probably won't and which runs on very low scale cases, and that is routine one. And there's another one which won't get you into too much trouble, and that is routine two. And that gives you your total bag of tricks. There's the total bag of tricks, and beyond that, there is none. So you got routine one, runs very low and probably doesn't mess up somebody too badly as far as their goals and terminals are concerned. It certainly progresses them and is very slow and is the only thing that you could run on an unconscious person. And a lot of other stuff. The PC won't talk to you and the PC can't be put in session at all. You got routine one. And it's long and it's arduous and it's hard for auditors to do, but it is successful and it shouldn't be thrown out of the bag of tricks. It's too good. Probably won't interfere with the golden terminal. Routine two, well, you can normally get away with that. You can do various broad general runs on the case and you're normally running against the terminal. It's quite amusing. You're sort of running the terminal blind. You don't know what the terminal is and yet you're running the case anyway. And that's very functional. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But it certainly is no substitute for finding the goal and running the terminal and running them. There's no substitute. There's no comparison. It improves your eventual run, but not to the degree that you might think it might. You don't lose. You don't lose on it. That's about all you can say about that. Then you've got routine 1A. And routine 1A is the one thing that will not interfere with the goal and the terminal assessment, but will improve it enormously, routine 1A. This also improves the living daylights out of your rudiment situation. And if your rudiments keep going out, why, you really haven't got much of a choice except routine 1A, that's all. Routine 1A processes could be entered in upon the first time that the PC is found to have a present time problem that didn't clear with the three types questions of two-way comm. You know, all right, routine 1A, that's it. Well, you'd never get in any trouble if you did that. It's a rather arduous look at the situation. Then you bring up routine 1A to a flat point, and 25 hours later, continue on to the point of asking, well, do you have an ARC plan? How do you feel about my auditing you? 25 hours later, we get to that rudiment level. You get the different look at the situation. Never did run a session on the fellow. You're still there on the brink. Well, that would certainly be a safe way to go about it. And I can tell you, if you did this, you'd almost never have an ARC broke PC. It would be a thing that would become very foreign to you. Somebody doesn't have any ARC breaks, auditor. Well, obviously, if this auditor never had an ARC break with a PC, PC never ARC broke on the audit, you'd have to assume about the auditor that the auditor took care of every problem that came up. See? So therefore, the PC was very solidly and always in session. You see how this fits together as a pattern? Well, fortunately, it does fit together, which is quite remarkable in itself. That's interesting, isn't it? That there is a road out. That's what's interesting. That there are some blazes on the trees. And of course, these blazes now, there's getting to be a pretty well-trodden path past them. And it leads straight out into the clear. Been doing so consistently. And picking up all of the elements of hundreds of thousands of elements, and millions of them perhaps, that I've reviewed in the past 13 years, that just about sums it up. And as far as processing is concerned, those are the safe things to do, and those are the various things which are reliable, and those are the things which get you there, and those are the things that produce results. So this leaves you with what? This leaves you with the fact that on anybody, any place, at any time, you could run and flatten any problems process. Great security. Never have any difficulty holding them in session or anything else. Flatten the problems process. Just flatten it and run it out. Unless you do something really wild, like run two commands of it and skip it or something like that. But you run, just run it and start your session. Do you have a present time problem? What was that? Well, it says, well, you say, all right, good, we're going to run a little process now, and you just pick up one of the processes from routine 1A. All right, your dissatisfaction with trying to clear rudiments would evaporate if you laid down this particular rule, that there were no rudiments processes. That's fantastic, isn't it? You just said, well, there were no rudiments processes. When you got the fellow up to a rudiment and so forth, then you audited the case toward clear. And that would be no waste of time at all, would it? Well, how to do that? How to do that? Well, that'd be the way you do it. You start the session, you say you have a present time problem, you find the guy's got a present time problem, well, you've had it. Now let's just go on with routine 1A. Eventually it flattens. 25, 50 hours later, flattens. That's out. That's gone now. You're not going to have too much trouble with problems. Now you say, it's all right if I audit you. It sounds kind of odd. Reduce it at that particular stage of the game, but that's actually where you've arrived to. Guy looks up the first time, you know, and he says, well, all right, all right. Well, what do you know? I thought it'd be a problem you auditing me, and it isn't, and that's that, so that clears that rudiment. Got the idea? All the time you're doing this, however, you could be clearing security checks. Takes care of a lot of ARC breaks and withholds. So a security check could be done at any time, and routine 1A could be done at any time, and how to keep out of trouble, we'll do 1A in security checks. And pretty soon you can't even squeeze anything out of the E-meter on the subject of problems in all of its various ramifications and unknowns and everything else that goes with it. You just can't squeeze a yip out of the E-meter. The guy is consistently sitting at the clear read, and the needle isn't clear, it isn't swinging, don't expect that it will either. But it'll be fairly loose. There it is. You say, well, it's time we took up me as an auditor. Might be adventurous up to that time. Mightn't it? Sort of non sequitur, the fellow sitting there in this little cage of problems, you know. With all the demons of existence poking dispatches and sabers and small atom bombs in through the bars, and this disrelated item suddenly emerges. Is it all right if I audit you? Who? You? Where? Who? What? Huh? Audit? Audit? Who? Audit? You? What? What's this? And this just looks like another dispatch or another saber or another small atom bomb which is shoved in the cage, don't you think? So if rudiments are that important and you're having trouble handling rudiments, which is obvious, all right, just take a broad, long look at the rudiments and say, well, the rudiments aren't 3 seconds long at the beginning of session. The rudiments are 50 hours long at the beginning of session. And you'd certainly have it and your dissatisfaction with a bad rudiments process, such as responsibility and so forth, would vanish, of course, because you're going to run the best processes that can possibly be run on problems in general. And you've had it. There it is. You're not going to have any trouble with that rudiment afterwards, I'll guarantee. You're not going to have any trouble at all with that rudiment. This fellow's up to a point where he can confront unknowns and wrap problems around his heads and give people problems and take problems, and he's no longer sitting in this cage, don't you think? He's no longer in a totally interiorized state, even though this has been run against his valence. Well, you see, the valence, the trick behind this is the valence was adopted to solve a problem, and therefore any valences the person is sitting in tend to resolve when you lessen his concern about problems, then you lessen the tension of the valence. You don't even have to know the valence to do this. All you have to do is lessen his thing. It's very funny, I rode over to Washington from London, I think, in 1956, and told him to lock it up in the safe, that the road out certainly contained problems, and that was the most reliable road out on the subject of it. That's just a valuable piece of technology. Probably still in the safe in Washington. But anyhow, I just didn't want to lose sight of that one. Because this obviously measured up to the various things that a person had and which way they were going. All right, it is very true that it is very difficult, very, very difficult to handle problems at the beginning of a session and then go on to something else. This is true. Unless you can say to the PC, if you can't say to the PC, well, tell me about it, what is it, how are you doing with it now, you know, that sort of thing. And you ask him, do you have a present time problem, look at the meter, and there's no response on the meter whatsoever. Unless that condition could occur, then if this can stop the whole parade, and if this can submerge the goal, and if this can submerge the terminal, and if this can make assessments impossible, and if you can waste weeks on doing a goals assessment and all this thing, well, then we have to come to the inevitable conclusion. But if it's that important, well, we'd better roll up all of our very best guns and just take care of it right there. You know, just the whole thing. And therefore, if a PC begins to have a large spate of problems, or a PC apparently has problems, or there's bunches of problems around, or if a PC, after being audited for a while, all of a sudden starts to run into lots of present-time problems. You know, he goes up and gets busier. Will you go back to flatten 1A? How long does it take to flatten 1A? Oh, it's not. It's been taken about 75 hours, 50 hours, 35 hours. Time periods of that character. Yeah, but look, all that time is saved off the assessment. And if you're going to waste 100 hours on assessments, you certainly better spend 50 hours on 1A. That's all that amounts to. And then you know where you're going and you have a certainty on it and you're not fumbling with the dissatisfaction of running an inadequate process on present time problems. Look good? Mm-hmm. All right, that would be a way to approach the situation. Now we get up to the auditor as the second rudiment, and of course if the fellow can have problems, and he isn't going to have a lot of trouble with problems, certainly 90% of what would be charged up on this particular auditor would have vanished by that time. Certainly, even though the auditor's been auditing them, it would just be vanishing all the time. But there might be a little bit left, so you would take up the subject after 1A, you could take it up and hit your next rudiment, you see? And you've already been hitting with holes and so forth consistently and continually. And in that you should be running the havingness and confront process of the PC. You have been remedying the fourth rudiment all the time. I haven't necessarily got the sequence straight. I'm talking about end rudiments. But you've been handling this, so that's out. So you haven't got to worry about that. So it looks like these things could be handled rather easily just on their own grounds, but given an importance. If these things are that important to a case, then they are all of them worth handling. If you find a fellow who is flat on problems, isn't going to have much trouble with the auditor. And also an auditor who's been sitting there pulling withholds off of him, he's certainly going to be willing to talk to the auditor. So that's solving that too. So you could go at it in these various ways, and you would wind up at the other end with your rudiments in. And I would say only after you've beaten them totally to death, since we've been having trouble with this. I admit you have. And just look at it on the reality of the situation. And not curse and scream in our beards and break the china and so forth and say you aren't doing your jobs. Let's get practical about the thing. And let's just take up rudiments as a preliminary to clearing and say that rudiments are not a preliminary to a session but a preliminary to clearing and just upgrade them until such time as all rudiments are in and will stay in and so forth. Why bother to assess? Now, as far as somebody staying interested in his own case is concerned, you can be absolutely certain he will be on problems because that's what's got him mainly interiorized. So that'll answer up as well as assessment. This is a way of approach, isn't it?
Yes.
All right. These things, the whole subject of auditing, is a subject of practicality. It is not a subject of theory. It is what works. The philosophers of the ages have been trying to drive shiny coaches down non-existent boulevards. And the screams of the dying multitude were dinning in their ears because their philosophies didn't work. But they were pretty. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. We should take our hats off to Nietzsche. Certainly pretty. Until you go over to Germany and France and start looking at all the graveyards and things like that, you say, well, that isn't quite so pretty. Oh, looks messy. And you start looking at the pillboxes that still are extant around Nancy and so forth, and you say, well, I don't know. They're not good architecture. There's something missing. There are no subtle curves. But it was awful pretty. Thus spake Zarathustra. But he didn't give a damn whether it worked or not, you see. Never entered his mind for a split second. Workability? Poo. The gorgeous example of the non-existence of the eighth planet. For years and years, the eighth planet did not exist. It had been observed in a telescope. It had been plotted. People in astronomy knew its name, rank, serial number, mass, density, course, and spin. But Hegel had said that there were only seven because seven was a perfect number. Beautiful coach, lovely, had big springs, and so forth. Only the road it was traveling on was built on nowhere. And the end of the road went off to ignorance. So there was no workability with regard to this. Whenever you look at auditing, whenever you look at Scientology, you should just look at that one fact. Does it work? We have actually been condemned because we are interested in whether or not something works. And current extant philosophy knows this has no bearing on the situation whatsoever. It is a crude attitude. It is absolutely crude. I've had a person object to Dianetics simply because they said, well, there was more to life than survival. Well, nobody said there wasn't. And certain said it was the common denominator of existence. Yes, but they couldn't take Dianetics because there was more to life than survival. They liked to think that. They liked to think that. And they didn't like to think of this other. And also, it was obvious that Manus was not good. And so, of course, that washed up the whole subject. And you say, well, how did you come to these conclusions? The fellow says, well, I just thought it over. He didn't bother to look at anything, you know. He didn't bother to go outside, open the door, and take a look at the world. No, it was perfectly adequate, utterly adequate, to sit there, you see, and have a couple of errant thoughts be distracted by the ticking of the clock, and say, well, no, well, I'd like to think of higher things. Well, man's been very interested in thinking about higher things until he's began to suffer from anoxemia. He's up there in the rarefied air. It certainly has nothing to do with, well, actually, it doesn't even have anything to do with man. I think it would be a sad day. I think it's been a sad day every time they tried to connect ancient philosophies with man. They have nothing to do with man. They have nothing to do with life. They're just pretty. The Greek, of course, in his terrific worship of the integrity or the thinkingness of man, himself went into a terrific figure. And his various schools and so forth that he formed were all more figure and more figure. And Greece lost her empire, lost this, lost that. Everything was caving in all directions, coming down. The Greek race was becoming less and less effective. Things were going to pieces. The Turks finally came in, took over the whole lot, burned practically everything, destroyed the Greek language, knocked everything all out. The Greek still figure. 1961, he still will figure. It's quite interesting. Nevertheless, he did have an idea that man was a subject of study, and to that we owe him some hat tipping. But I'm afraid I don't owe very much hat tipping to a lot of these philosophers, because they would say that it was a total betrayal of a philosophy to alter anything in it that had been laid down. And I'll tell you, of course, that you're perfectly, all you've got to do is make it clear by some other route which is workable and practical and other people can do, and it follows up to all tests of clears, of course, and we'd abandon every trail we've got, you see, if that was much easier and faster. But it hasn't happened. It hasn't happened. 13 years, everybody's had a large, wide opportunity. Last 10, 11, certainly, they've had a wonderful opportunity to figure out brand new routes, ways, and so forth, and I've had them mailed to me and telegraphed to me and cabled to me in far parts of the world, and I've seen them on boards and fixed up, and they've been applied this way and that, but they didn't clear people. All right, right now we're clearing people, so my whole attention is upon the workability of this one fact. Because I am a man of ambition. I am a man of very, very vast ambitions. The vastness of my ambitions right now have this particular zone and area. As every time somebody walks in the front door of a central organization or up an auditor's front steps, that at the end of the auditing, he will turn around and walk out clear. That is considerable ambition, and we were right there on the threshold of achieving that ambition. As a matter of fact, we're more than on the threshold of it. We're actually taking the practical steps to affect that very thing. When we whistle up somebody from a central organization and say, come on in here, we're not kidding. And when I send a cable to somebody in some far place and say, so-and-so is expected at St. Hill, we're not kidding. It's not nonsense that we're talking, because that's what we want to have happen. I think that'd be a very interesting thing to have happen. And when you see these clears, they start into their immediate areas, and they start polishing everything up, and everything goes into action, and everything's very busy, and so on. The horrors of the ancient philosopher. I imagine the man could have nightmares over this. He knows what a clear is supposed to do. He's supposed to sit on a mountaintop and regard his navel. But anyway, we're interested, therefore, and thereby, and only, in the practical steps necessary to it. And my conclusion, as of right this minute, is that if you were having trouble keeping rudiments in order to do goals assessments, and if you were totally capable of actually using up 2 or 3 months in trying to find somebody's goal, well, it'd be simpler to get the rudiments in first, and it would be simpler and time-saving. It's each rudiment required something on the order of 50 hours and was simply taken separately, one after the other, and 50 hours were devoted to each one. It would still be a time economy. Because naturally, at the other end of it, you'd wind up with his goal, bang, right now, you see? And you'd wind up with his terminal, bang, right now. And you'd do his assessment, bang, and you wouldn't lose a single minute of his run. And probably, if you took 200 hours to get in the rudiments, you'd probably clear a fellow in five. You got the idea? I mean, it's that ridiculous. And as I look at it, that is the practical way of approaching that thing. So watch those rudiments and turn up that sensitivity, and if your PC has got one consistently out, go back and flatten 1A. Okay? Thank you.